One of the things that people might have slipped past people's attention is that the Victorian government completely lost the plot. It would appear that not only are they wanting to put all children 14 and above committing violent crimes into detention indefinitely, but also that they want to resurrect the zombie legislation around quelling dissent. There's going to be a snap rally on Tuesday, the anti-protest laws rally, Tuesday the 18th of November, 5:30 p.m. Parliament steps, called by the Defend Dissent Coalition. As Friends of the Earth have put out a release saying the laws have been condemned by human rights organisations, multicultural organisations, trade unions and more for threatening our right to freely assemble and participate in peaceful protest, the cornerstone of our democracy. The restrictions on face masks threaten the immune compromised and others who have very legitimate reasons to wear a mask at protests. To get a medical exemption, you would need to produce a proof of medical status when asked by the police, which could lead to the targeting of people with disabilities and dissuade them from attending protests. Similarly, many people wear masks to protect their anonymity, to stop being targeted by far-right groups, or to prevent being identified by perpetrators of family violence, employers, family members, or people in their community who could retaliate for their participation in protests, not to mention to protect from police indiscriminate use of capsicum spray, as we've seen of late. Also, under the new laws, those using attachment devices could face a year in jail. Protesters have long used glues, ropes and locks in ways that do not pose a danger to the public. In fact, attachment devices have been an integral part of community strategies to save forests, stop gas drilling, secure workers' rights and more. The laws could put those people in jail for a year. Shocking. Proposed laws in Western Australia and laws introduced in Queensland enabling police to target activists possessing devices that could be used to lock on have previously been criticised by four UN special rapporteurs as punishing expression protected by international human rights laws. So the merry maids at Victorian Parliament are on the march, and part of it is the Human Rights Law Centre condemns the Allan government for proposing children as young as 14 be locked away for life in Victoria.
And on a platform that's eerily reminiscent of what the Queensland Liberal government ran on, which is adult crime, adult time.
Yeah, that's right. This is from the press release that the Victorian government put out. All children 14 and above committing violent crimes, like invading someone's home or injuring someone with a machete in a sickening act of violence, will face adult sentences in adult courts under adult time for violent crime. That means courts will treat these children like adults, so jail is more likely and sentences are longer. I've got to tell you what she said, though. This is from their release. Premier Jacinta Allan joined Attorney General Sonia Kilkenny today to announce that the Allan government, Labor government, will implement it in Victoria with a bill to be introduced in Parliament this year. Adult time for violent crime will deliver serious consequences for children committing brazen violent crimes that hurt victims and the community.
I think for me it just makes me question what is the kind of intention behind this type of bill, because we know that the more jail time that children face, the more time in institutions that children face, the more likely they are to reoffend. So this isn't actually
Children?
Yes, also their children. clearly the human rights implications are shocking enough, but even from kind of a pragmatic perspective, thinking about creating safer communities, this is not going to do that. And so I think I personally find it particularly kind of disgusting to think that this is essentially a PR campaign that's jeopardizing the futures of clearly vulnerable children.
Yeah, the Human Rights Centre put out its release. It said that the shameful laws will also exacerbate the state's mass imprisonment crisis and the number of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children being pipelined into prisons. These proposed laws come after the Allan government recently announced they would open the decommissioned Malesborough Youth Prison to lock away more children and defund services that provide invaluable support to children in the community. Children deserve care, not cages and adult prison sentences. The Allan government's proposed laws will condemn children as young as 14 to irreversible harm and an incredibly bleak future behind bars. It's interesting because...
I just think it should be called child abuse.
Yeah, yeah.
That
well,
is what it is.
Well, it's interesting because I covered a film. I can't remember the name of the film, but it was about... it was a documentary following the work of a program that opened up artistic expression to male prisoners in Victoria, right? And a lot of it was directed to Aboriginal people, older men who were in these prisons. And one of the things that came out in this film was that when these guys came out of prison, they then had a new way of making a living. But the other thing that came out in the film was that all of them had been young boys who had been targeted at a very early age and had ended up in Dramana and places of that nature. And so by that point, their lives were irreversibly changed. And the point about leaving with a skill, allowing them to make a living, it just changed their entire but the thing that really got me was the fact that they were targeted as naughty boys. They were naughty boys. And how is it possible that a whole group or a whole generation is lost because of a racist community? We're fundamentally racist.
And a community that doesn't make enough provisions for children that aren't getting their needs and support needs met at home. Like no one is committing violent crimes without a broader context of distress going on.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, we all know that when a kid makes a really big noise, adults always think that giving them a clip over the ears, not every adult, is going to do the trick.
I'm sorry, we should get back to proper headlines, but I think this is too insane not to mention on this topic. I was in the car the other day and a mainstream or a commercial radio station came on and there was someone on the line saying, you know, the reason that violent crime is on the increase is because we don't use corporal punishment anymore. Back in my day, we had the strap. You got smacked if you did the wrong thing.
And there's nothing wrong with me.
Crimes. Yeah, and look at me.
Look at me. Look at me. Look at me.
I don't know why people haven't figured out yet that being violent towards children does not make them more likely to lead peaceful lives.
Yeah, exactly. Shocking.
Well, you won't hear any of those remarks on community radio because you are on 3CR and we don't encourage corporal punishment.
We certainly do not. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right.
I'd just like to read just the most recent Al Jazeera little recap. I'll just read the first little paragraph about the Israel's ceasefire violations. 1 month into the declaration of a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip, Israel has violated the agreement with near daily attacks, killing hundreds of people. Israel violated the ceasefire agreement at least 282 times from October 10th to November 10th through the continuation of attacks by air, artillery, direct shootings, and direct shootings, the government media office in Gaza reports. The office said that Israel shot at civilians 88 times, raided residential areas beyond the yellow line 12 times, bombed Gaza 124 times, and demolished people's properties on 52 occasions. It added that Israel also detained 23 Palestinians from Gaza over the past month. This is as they negotiate 200... Hamas fighters that are trapped behind the yellow line and with Israel refusing to guarantee them any sort of safe exit and continuing demolishing any type of building that's behind the yellow line, saying that Israel's well within its rights to do whatever it wants with that land that it occupies now.
And the other bit of news in the Middle East that I think is worth mentioning is that the UN Human Rights Office reported on Thursday that Israel has killed at least 114 Lebanese civilians since the ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon began in November of 2024. So they're also breaching the terms of that ceasefire agreement.
Yeah, well, there's no ceasefire. Yeah, I mean, it's an ertzat ceasefire. I want to move to the cultural survival and COP30. You may, if you've been tuned to Instagram, have seen some amazing pictures of Amazonian Indians in full regalia gate crashing one of the meetings at COP30. The indigenous peoples of the world are banding together and have got a clear message around what they expect to come from COP30. Cultural Survival put out a list of the things that they consider to be a top of the list for the inclusion of indigenous perspectives, as well as the saving of the planet being the priority of any meeting about so-called climate. They demand finance, justice and direct access to climate finance by Indigenous communities, end of sacrifice zones by dismantling the system of environmental racist sacrifice zones created by extractive projects and infrastructure corridors. No community should bear the cost of green, in inverted commas, transitions that reproduce historical injustices, dispossession and contamination in the name of just transition of or green economy. Free, prior and informed consent in all matters related to Indigenous peoples, including policies, investments and extractive industries, and so-called consent given or withdrawn, or so-called development projects from cradle to grave. Communities must be consulted and consent given or withdrawn. End to false solutions such as carbon markets, offsetting and debt-inducing climate finance. Protection of Indigenous peoples in voluntary isolation and initial contact, territorial protection and demarcation of Indigenous lands and territories. A just transition rooted in Indigenous peoples' rights. Precise and systematic integration of Indigenous knowledge systems in all climate policies, national determined contributions and national adaptation plans, direct participation in the design and oversight of transition mineral supply chains, respect and inclusion of Indigenous leadership and knowledge from youth and elders through knowledge exchange investments and youth and elders funds, systems for digital sovereignty, more effective protection of environmental Indigenous rights defenders. I think that's made it fairly clear what they expect from COP30.
Mm-hmm. You know, on environmental news, we've also had some positive news this week. For a little while, we've been covering Monash University's involvement with Woodside Energy. And this week it was announced that the university has cut ties or is planning to cut ties with Woodside Energy following the successful campaign of Stop Woodside Monash, who we were lucky enough to have a chat to on the show. And they've passed on a statement that they'd like us to read out. They've said, we don't yet know the details of this announcement, but this isn't the end of our campaign. We will continue to campaign for a Monash free of fossil fuels and weapons, including total divestment from all fossil fuels and a decent environment, social and governance policy. This win comes as the Monash Vice Chancellor and Chancellor today at 3 p.m. face questioning in the Federal Senate inquiry into university governance, to which Stop Woodside Monash made a submission earlier this year. We are grateful for the endless support from the Monash Student Association and the Monash branch of the National Tertiary Education Union. These representative organisations have been staunch allies in this campaign. To the many staff and students who have attended our events and rallies, signed petitions, shared our content and helped hold Monash accountable for the harm that Woodside Energy causes, this campaign wouldn't exist without you. However, the fight is not over. Monash is currently seeking to abolish the Monash Sustainable Development Institute, MSDI, and fossil fuel influence is still prevalent at our university and in many others. Woodside continues to destroy country, climate and community in and beyond Pilbara. We stand in solidarity with Save Our Songlines and the custodians of the lands Woodside continues to exploit in the name of profit. Moments like this prove that organising works. Grassroots campaigns and people power create hope in the face of the climate crisis, and we're overjoyed to have made a small part of that history today.